Today is February 16th, and we are in the study of Moshe, and the development of Moshe as character and prophet. And sources regarding Moshe stem, obviously, from the Tanakh itself, from the Torah, mostly Sefer Shmot and Bamidbar, right? But there's also some material about Moshe that comes through from the books of Neviim and Ketuvim, right? Micha has certain references to Moshe that don't come through in the Torah. Right? The most is Tehillim. Tehillim, there are whole chapters in Tehillim that describe Moshe's activities in Shemot, from some of them from different standpoints, especially chapters 78, 105, and 106. And there are some others, 100, how about the Kilom Chasdo, the 26 Kilom Chasdos, right? Chapter 136. So there, it's all over, and even it's not, of course. This is Tehillim, of course, Divrei Hayomim. Divrei Hayomim has lots of material, right? In its lists of early parts of Torah that can relate to Moshe. But from the Torah, I have material that appears in some what they call pre-Chazal. Right? That would be the writings of Philo of Alexandria. That would be in maybe even in Josephus. Dead Sea Scrolls, the Apocrypha, okay? Right. Then there are also some corpuses of literature. I'm not calling them Chazal, and I'm certainly not calling them pre-Chazal, but there are some, and it's really interesting, there's no monolithic way of how to read these sources. Tell me if you've ever heard of these Midrashim. Midrash, Divrei Hayomim de Moshe. Life and times of Moses. Medrash Patiras Moshe. The Medrash of the death of Moshe. I mean, it's very, very interesting stuff. I would call these, if I were going to quote from either of those two books in a sermon on a Shabbos morning, right, I would use a particular language in quoting. I would say, there is a tradition within Judaism. It's Pav. Okay? Does that mean that the tradition is authoritative? When I say the word Chazal is limited to the following. To what's in print, obviously, otherwise how do I know it's a Chazal? And what's in print is very simple. Mishnah, Talmud, right? Tosefta, Medrash Halacha, right? Mechilta Sifra Sifrei, and the Midrash Agadah.
It's like
Midrash
Rabbah.
Transforma, Midrash Rabbah, Midrash Shmuel, Midrash Mishlei, Midrash Tehillim, right? Okay? And then what started to crop up in the Middle Ages were these collections of Midrash, Yalkut Shimon, Yalkut Amakiri, Yalkut Ruvain. There were those people who wrote collections of Midrashim on each particular text. The Gemara's Agada took quotes and not by Sefer. But what Yalkut Shimoni did was it took all the sources it could get together and just kept them on, you know, in order on the texts. So you can look up all the Midrashim in Yeshayahu. It's very ordered that way, right? Got it? Okay. So if I were going to quote from Medrash Divrei Hayomim de Moshe, for instance, that tells something we don't know from Chazal, but that when Moshe left Egypt at the age of 20, and he arrived in Midian, it doesn't say how old he was when he arrived, but that he married the daughter of the Kohen Midian, right? And had two children with her, and that when the second one was born, he was 80 years old, right? We know that already. The second one was the one that with the bris, and it says at that point he's 80, his brother's 83, right? So there's a lot of time in between. And unlike, I guess in the movie he goes straight from Egypt to Midian, right? In the movie The Ten Commandments, right? But in this Midrash Divrei Hayomim de Moshe, not so. His escape from Egypt wasn't to Midian. His escape from Egypt was to Ethiopia. And he became the king of Ethiopia for some time. Did you ever hear this? Is this mamish news to you?
Yeah.
And he married an Ethiopian woman.
Sipora.
An Ethiopian woman. He married a queen of Ethiopia. Right? And that was, where does that show up in the Torah? Miriam was talking about Isha Kushit Asher Lakach. Does that sound familiar now? Right? In Parshat Balotcha. In Devarim. In Bamidbar. Right? It doesn't sound familiar that but the bear Miriam Va'aron and Miriam became leprous because she spoke against her brother, right? Right? So the woman she spoke about was this Isha Kushit Asher Lakach. That Miriam was speaking about this Ethiopian woman that Moshe said, "Hey, she's my wife," and he brought her in.
Is that pshat?
That's the ultimate pshat.
I never heard of that.
Isha kushit asher lakach. Miriam was speaking about. Hold on, I'll get to that. Miriam was speaking about the Ethiopian wife of Moshe. Now, there's only one parshan of note amongst the Rishonim that writes this. And you should know that this is no doubt the Parshan most dedicated to Pshuto Shomikra more than anyone else.
Ibn Ezra.
And it's not Ibn Ezra. And I'm glad that you mentioned him because that's what most people on the street would say. Ibn Ezra is very, very dedicated. No. It's Rashi's grandson.
Rashbam.
Rashi's grandson was shot overall.
If I have to
resort to Midrash Divrei de Moshe to say the pshat kushit is kushit, I can't help it. You want to make a drash that she was so outstanding, like a kushit standing in a crowd of white people? Come on, that's not the pshat. If it was about Tzipora, say so. Now, Rashbam may agree that there is a tradition that it's. But I have to say pshat. My parish is pshat.
That he had another wife.
One look at my grandfather's parish that he had a second wife and he actually brought her back at this point. So Miriam thought that's untoward. Right? So that's Rashbam. Rashi has a totally other way of reading this. Or that he didn't bring her back, but that he just acknowledged that he has a second wife. Tzipora was not his only wife. Yes.
What's the translation?
Ethiopian.
Oh, to Ethiopia.
Kush is Ethiopia.
But where is Sipora?
To this day, Ethiopia is called Kush.
Where is Sipora from?
She's a Midianite.
Sipora is a Midianite.
Where is Midian?
Ah, so now you're saying something very interesting. If you have a full Tanakh, please open up to Habakkuk. Habakkuk, Perek Gimel, Pasuk Zayin. Open up. Habakkuk, you'll find it in Treasor.
I'm sorry, violence.
Perek Gimel, Pasuk Zayin. Read it.
Tashat Adam, Ayyati Mahalei Kushan, Yerjun, Yer, Yerivot, Arkadian.
Okay, what can you possibly do with this pasuk? You see what he's doing?
The inhabitants are both attached to the word Shayna, pavilion for land.
What is Habakkuk doing with this pasuk?
He's saying no one was saying.
He is using Kushan and Midian in a parallel form.
Because they're the same, one and the same.
Because they could be one and the same. Now, the question is, can we look in the rest of Tanakh and see, was there a place called Kushan in the desert?
No.
Yes, there is.
There is.
It's for Shoftim.
Oh,
Shoftim.
Where?
The name of Shoftim. There's Kushan.
That's
now, I would expect a woman from Kushan to be called a Kushanit rather than a Kushit. But that's quibbling. I can mention many other examples where nuns fall out. Shiloni from Shiloh. There's Kushani Kushi. All right, we're quibbling. But once I have a prophet who connects Kushan with Midian, then it's not out of the question to refer to a Midianite woman as a Kushit.
Well, I mean, that's maybe.
I like that shot.
I mean, that's not Kush drafting,
but
yeah, I agree.
Ibn Ezra should.
Yeah.
He doesn't. He should. Why? Because Ibn Ezra Ibn Ezra writes in his parish to Parsha Balotcha that we have a Kabbalah that this woman was Tzipora. Right? We have a Kabbalah, and Ibn Ezra was willing to accept Kabbalahs. He writes, Im Kabbalah Nikabel. Ibn Ezra writes, Im Kabbalah Nikabel. In other words, I know it's not pshat, but there's such a strong tradition within Judaism, because it doesn't defy my logic that this woman could be Tzipora. Defies my logic is when Rashi talks about water rising out of a well into a pail. I'm not going to accept such a Kabbalah. Because that defies my why does it say so? I'm not against miracles, Ibn Ezra says. Right? But I'm against, you know, you're just using some kind of missing term to say things that are just not believable. Okay? But it's not unbelievable that Miriam was talking about Tzipora. Adarabba, that's the whole point of the story. That her Lashon Hara was not about Moshe's marital life. Her Lashon Hara was about Moshe's prophetic ability. Explain. We talked about this already, right? Does God only talk to him? He talks to us, and yet we somehow managed to maintain marital relations. It was Lashon Hara about his prophetic ability. We talked about this, no? And that's why the next pasuk refers to him as an anav. Mm-hmm. Because if not for his characteristic humility, she would have known very often how different he is than she is. That's what we talked about with Kesheyu Hashem, that he realized that God comes to me at any moment. Something he doesn't do to them. That's why right after Miriam spoke this Lashon Hara, God called Miriam and Aaron right into the Ohel Moed, pitom, suddenly, and then kicks them out. Because you know what? If you stay here, you're going to die, the two of you. You can't handle it here. You're not Moshe. It was by Kesheyu Hashem that happened to Moshe that one time. What happened to you and Miriam and Aaron every time I come to you like that? He realized how different he is. But he's such an honor, he never told you. Okay, you get it? Alright, so the Rashbam quotes this, he quotes this by name in his Perush. I saw in Medrash Divra Hayamim de Moshe that he was married to an Ethiopian woman. And that's the Kushit.
That's what Rashi says?
No. Rashbam, his grandson. Rashi accepts that it's Tzipora, of course. It's the Marian Moed Cotton after Zion, so he accepts it. But Rashbam just, he says, Pshat goes over everything for me. Ibn Ezra says, if there's a strong Kabbalah that this is Tzipora, I'll go along with it, as long as it doesn't defy my logic. Right?
Why?
Wouldn't
the Ibn Ezra focus a lot more on like the historical perspective and what would be the historical truth?
Yeah, but so in the Chinami,
no,
may think like Rashi that there's sometimes more to this text. Look, to Rashbam, there's a strong, powerful message. What is the particular punishment that is given to Miriam after this story? What does the punishment do to her?
Well, why is she a punishment?
So her skin changes color, right?
Yeah.
So now you see there's a deeper message Rashbam wants to give here.
What's the whole thing of Kushi, which is
black? Miriam, like, do I read you right? That there's something that you don't like about the color of the skin of your brother's wife? Okay, let's see how you like your the color of your skin changing. Okay?
Interesting. I mean,
Rashbam's statement is a very deep. There's a depth to it, right? It's not just that Saras is the typical punishment for Lashon Hara. Maybe so. But it's specifically that her, if this is the nature of Lashon Hara, it's not about his prophetic ability. We'll explain the fact that he mentions him as being having humility is a different thing to Rashbam. It's that if Moshe wasn't had such an honor, he would have stood up for himself. He goes, no, it's not why she spoke about me. I don't care. I have my self-esteem. Right? I don't care what you say. I don't care what you say. I have to defend myself to my sister. I don't care what you said. God, please don't punish her on my behalf. Please. So that's the anivus to Rashbam. But But the Anivas to Rashi and even Ezra specifically goes down to why she spoke Lashon Hara in the first place. Because you have no idea how different he is than you. It's about Tzipora and Moshe's limited association with her. One can see that really coming through. Let's do this now and turn to this week's parsha, because it's just a coincidence that we happen to be in a good place for that with this week's parsha. Turn to Yisro, Shmos Perek Yudchet. Remember, the last time he saw his wife was when she gave the child a bris. With me? She throws the flint on the ground, and then he continues on his way. His brother meets him, and they perform the miracles. I don't see his wife or two kids anywhere until now, during this whole entire time. Right? They may have read in the papers, or may have heard on social media all that their father and their husband had done. You know, if Yisro heard, they must have heard too about all that went on, right? Okay, and he's very, you know, their daddy is very famous now, right? Okay, and their husband is famous. Okay, just to close the door on this, I don't know what to call it. It's not pre-Chazal because it's probably quite a bit later than Chazal. Is that when Ibn Ezra says that he thinks that the Shakushit is really Tzipora, and I like our proof. Yeah, I hope you like our proof from Habakkuk, right? When Ibn Ezra quotes Rashbam on this and says there's another Rishon that says that this was a real Ethiopian woman, he takes a swipe. He did not like Rashbam at all. Ibn Ezra wrote poems against Rashbam. He sticks it into his commentary, but only in Shmos, because remember, the Ibn Ezra that we have in Amikro Gedolah to Shmot is not the same as the Ibn Ezra of the other four books. They're written maybe 40 years apart, right? Have you ever heard this? That Ibn Ezra wrote two commentaries to the Torah. So he wrote two Bereishis, two Shmot, right? So we should have 10 books of Ibn Ezra, right? We only have 6. You understand? We have 6. We have all of the Perushim of Ibn Ezra to what's called the short Perush, right? So that if you opened up a Bamidbar, you can see that Ibn Ezra is a small little piece of Bamidbar. But in Shmos, he tends to take up a lot more of the page. Right? Just look on average. Now, in Shmos, So Shmot is known as the Perush Aroch. The problem is that the only Perush of the Perush Aroch that we have to Ibn Ezra is to Shmot. We don't have the other four books. You get this, the 6, the 5 of the small, and just Shmot. So when Christians in 1524 put together the first Mikro Gedolot, right, and Ibn Ezra was a shoo-in to make the first cut, right, it's very popular already. Right? So their decision was they weren't going to put in two Perushim of the same person. But you see what they ended up doing. They gave you the longer one only to Shmot. And the shorter one to the other four. And it sometimes emerges that it looks like you're reading two different Perushim. Because he'll say some things like in Bereshit under the Pasuk Bi Adoni, Yedaber Nob Adoni Avdob Razneb. And then by Yivigashin, he says, in Shmot, I'll explain what the word B means. And he doesn't.
It's the same guy,
though. Oh, no doubt. It's the same person.
How do we know? No doubt.
You see, it's a style. It's the same. No doubt. That scholarship is well behind us.
Really?
And the scholarship today is still busy working on which one is first. But that's also such a moot point. It's so obvious that the short one is his earlier parish. The long one, he changed many things. There's some very, very obvious changes between the short and the long. And among them are that he never mentions Rashbam in the short, but in the long, he's quite aware of him.
Well, then how do we know that there are two different rabbis who wrote the commentaries?
Because his he identifies himself, and he goes talks about my relationship with Rashi Gaon, or my relationship with Yehuda Levi and things like that. And it comes through, no doubt, really no doubt. Ibn Ezra cites so many different commentaries that are similar in all of them, but here there is an interesting difference, though, is that in the short one, he quotes Karaites with great vitriol. He almost always will make fun of their name. He quotes them by name. He doesn't have to quote them at all. Quotes them by name. And then says, you know, I see his name is Yitzchak. Everyone who reads his words laughs at him. Right? But what's fascinating is that in Shmos, he quotes Karaites with respect almost. He just quotes them without even making fun of their name or without making fun of what they're saying, and he just quotes them. But there's something worse going on here. This is almost, to me, it's almost nefarious. And I have records. I keep records of this in my notes to the Rishonim. Is that he quotes especially two Karaites, someone named Yefet Ben Eli, and someone he calls Rebbe Yeshua, another Karaite. But this is I say it's nefarious. He quotes them when it's really Rashi. Many times. That doesn't mean that Yefet is really Rashi. No, of course not. It means Yefet says the same as Rashi, but he quotes in the name of Yefet. Rashi was before Yefet ben Eli. You see, what does this prove about Ibn Ezra? It's probably the first person of significance, definitely a significant commentary. In the last 900 years, who wrote a commentary to the Torah that masses of people use that did not first
know
Rashi. The indications are quite clear that he wrote his commentary without reading Rashi. He quotes him very rarely in his parish. He quotes what he says often in the name of other people. It's unforgivable. And sometimes they're even Gemaras. Then I have no patience for that. If it's a Gemara, why not say the Gemara says this? Right? That's another debate about Ibn Ezra. Was he a Talmud Chacham, or was he just an anthology of older Perushim? You're second to none in grammar, but what happens? You see, if when Rashbam quotes something against the Gemara, no one's going to say that means he didn't know the Gemara. Why? Rashbam is one of the great Balei HaTosfos. He's the one they call on to write the commentary to the Gemara when Rashi dies. Right? So Rashbam is the greatest Talmudist of his day. If any one Rishon outshines him, it's his younger brother Rabbi Natan, or his middle brother Rabbi the Ri. Right? Three brothers who are real giants. Right? They all lived long lives. They have great influences in Israel. Right? Semites out there, I can't believe it. So Rashbam accepts this tradition, and Ibn Ezra gets crazy on it. He says, I can't believe that he went against the tradition, that it was Tzipora, and he uses this rogue. He calls it a rogue commentary, a rogue source. He says, how dare he quote from such a source that we don't even know where it comes from? Right? Okay. All right. So that's the difference between Rashbam and Ibn Ezra.
So how do we understand the Ibn Ezra? If they're saying that he doesn't quote Gemaras properly.
So some say he misquotes a Gemara because he tries to be more traditional than Rashbam. I'll give you an example. It says in next week's Parsha that if a Hebrew slave wants to work on with his master, he gets his ear pierced. And it says, Va'avado le'olam. One of these two tries to prove that le'olam means adayovel, and the other one says, Lefi pshuto kol yimei chayav. Even though that goes against the halacha, and even though it goes against Sukkim and Vayikra that say no Jewish slaves works for the rest of his life. Right? So Rashbam is the one, Va'avado le'olam. And Ibn Ezra tries to prove that lo'olam means yoga. I can give this many, many examples with this. In Halacha en Agadah, where Ibn Ezra tries to stay with the tradition, and Rashbam, you know, says that this is pshat. Okay. All right, so this is the lowdown on these two. Now let's get back into Shmos Perek Yudchet. Okay. And again, Ibn Ezra only quotes Rashbam in his Perish to Shmos. There's one place in his Perish to Bereshis he should have quoted him up the wazoo. It's where it says, Vayera Vayboker Yom Echad. Are you familiar with this? I don't want to interrupt, and you know, it's a great Parshanut issue. But on the Pasuk, Vayera Vayboker Yom Echad, Rashbam says that the Jewish that the day starts based on this Pasuk in the morning, not at night.
And Rashi says the opposite.
That's the big, well, it's a Gemara. The first page of Brachas Daf Beis says the day starts at night. The halachic day starts at night. You think Rashbam started Shabbos on Saturday morning? Of course not. He just says, if you do Pshuto Shel Mikra, it's not the Pshat that teaches us the day starts at night. It's Drash. Because the Pshat, Vayera Vayboker, means it became night, it became morning.
That was the day.
That was the first day. Now day two is going to start where we left off in the morning. Right? It's Vayiboker Vayerev that would mean the day starts at night. So that's what he writes in his parish. Why should we lose any sleep over this? First of all, it's before Matan Torah. At Matan Torah, it's a Chiddush. The day starts at night. Right? But here's the point. Is that Ibn Ezra wrote a poem called Igeret HaShabbos. The Sabbath Epistle. And in Igeres HaShabbos, Ibn Ezra wrote this poem protecting and defending Shabbos against Jews who he found in his travels. You know, Ibn Ezra traveled the world, right? He found in his travels communities of Jews, not Karaites, because Karaites keep Shabbos from Friday night to Saturday night. He polemicized against them over this. He said, how do you know that the day starts at night, if not from oral traditions? Why are you picking and choosing your traditions? Right? So Ibn Ezra blamed this phenomenon of Shabbos observance from morning to morning on Rashbam in his poem. First of all, it's not fair. Those communities were doing that well before Rashbam was born, right? And Rashbam warns his readers many times in his perush, you are not to act halachically on my perush. My perush is just the pshuto shomikra of the Torah. The main way for the Jew to read biblical text is through the Midrashim and the Gemaras. Just my perush is to give you the ikur pshat. That's all. He knows there's a mission that says Hamagala ponim b'Torah keneged halacha ein lo chelek lo lamava. That if you try to prove to the Jews that you should keep Shabbos from Saturday morning to Sunday morning, that you lose your olam haba. There's an interesting postscript to this. Is that the art scrolls new mikros gedolos that's just coming out? They have excised this Rashbam. Doesn't exist. 800 years of Mikros Gedolos have had this Rashbam in it. I shouldn't say 800 years, but 800 years of Perush Rashbam has had it, and no one found anything wrong with it. Now it's no longer part of Rashbam in a new Mikros Gedolos. It's not a smart thing.
What's the Rashbam's agenda or methodology?
You could say, what's Rashbam, what's your purpose?
Right.
It's just to show, I want to teach my people how to read the Ikur Pshat. But if that's not what it was, I think if we had Rashbam sitting in this chair and we asked him, Rashbam, I want to ask you, was Moshe married to an Ethiopian woman or not? I think he'd say he was. If there is a question of halacha, does a slave go free at the Yovel or not? Of course he'd say he does. So why write in your parish anything but that? This is because my job is to explain the pasuk. It's trying to tell the guy who wants to work on, don't work on because it's going to feel like forever for you. I'm as bothered as Ibn Ezra, or Ibn Ezra can say I'm as bothered as Rashbam over why the Torah said La'olam if it meant Yovel. Right? Alright, but it is what it is. I can only comment on what's in front of me. Right? Okay, but you get a picture of it, that Rashbam and Ibn Ezra might be cut from similar cloth when it comes to their objection to the drushers that Rashi gives in his parish. Ishbam was even more critical against his grandfather than Ibn Ezra was, right? In some cases. It's just that Ibn Ezra shows the utmost lack of respect by not quoting Rashi. Rashbam, for whatever he does in his pshat, clearly is commenting on Rashi in his perush. He deals with the same issues Rashi deals with, just from a very different direction. Let's turn to Perek Yud-Chet now and see that when Moshe returns after all this time away, he's been away at least a year. We can tell from the narratives that it's been at least a year. The Mishnah in Ediot says it's exactly a year. But, right, whatever it is. It's been some time. Okay? So it says, Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyan Chosein Moshe is kol asher asor Elokim l'Moshe v'Yisrael amo ki yotzias Yisrael mimitzrayim. Right? Yisro had heard about Egypt. He had seen some other things maybe with his eyes. I tell you the difference because the last parak in Maseches Brachos, which is called Haroeh, if you see a place where a miracle was done, you should say a bracha. And the Gemara says, how do we know this? And it says it from Yisro. But Yisro is not Vayar Yisro, it's Vayishma Yisro. Alright, the Marsha Ayin Sham, if you're curious. Vayikach Yisro Chosein Moshe, Es Tzipora Eishes Moshe, Achar Shilucheha. Yisro took her back home. She went back home to her father, right? Mistama, when they got the bris, it was baderech bamalon, right? Moshe, Mistama, sent them back home on a taxi or something, on a chamor. He sent them back, I don't know how far that malon was from Midian, right? You hear? But he sent her back, right? Ve'eishneboneho, and it goes through quite a bit of verbosity here. It tells you the reasons why they got their names, right? All having to do with something in Moshe's life, right? Maybe she should be named Gershom for something that has to do with the mother. The mother usually gets to name. It's in all our tribes are named by Leah and Rachel. Only Levi is named by Yaakov, right? So Moshe is central to everything here. It tells you the names of the children based on his experiences, right? So Vayavo Yisro Chosein Moshe, he's always called Chosein Moshe, sometimes just Chosein Moshe, even without the word Yisro. Uvanav v'ishto el Moshe, el hamidbar ashehu chonesh sham har elokim. Right? And they went out to greet him. There's five psukim about the greeting. It's really a lot of verbosity here. I am Yisro, your father-in-law, coming out to greet you, and my daughter, your wife, and her two sons. Look at the next pasuk and tell me what impression you get. Pasuk Zion. You haven't seen your wife and two kids in a year.
He goes straight to Yisro. Instead of going to Tzibor, he goes straight to Yisro.
So here is what I'd like to suggest to you. Moshe, from the time that angel came to almost kill him, where he realized that I'm different. He doesn't share that with his sister or his brother or anyone else. He realizes he's different. I have a certain relationship with Hashem that makes me reevaluate what I have to do in this life of mine, right? The Torah is going to present him that way. I don't feel the need to say that Moshe did something that day that I would have done, which is, I would have, come here, boys! Look what I got you from Egypt! Look at I got you some toys. I got you a bag of M&Ms. You know, I would roll around with my kids. I haven't seen him. Oh, Gershom and Eliezer. Oh, my goodness. When you were just 8 days old the last time I saw you. Look how much you've grown. Right? So I don't need to create Moshe in my image. What Moshe actually did between Pasuk Vav and Pasuk Zion, I mean, just when he says, I brought your wife and two sons, And then he just, and then the pasuk just says he kissed his father-in-law and ate a meal with his father without a single, because it's not the Torah's way to describe Moshe's reunion with his family. Moshe is like v'techasreu ma'at me'elokim.
That doesn't really work with the grammar though. So say vayetze Moshe likras kosno means that he went out in order to go see his father.
Indeed.
So
indeed.
Obviously, it wasn't just that the Torah didn't mention.
Okay, so because of Ayetze, Ibn Ezra writes that this is with a shliach. Yisro sent the shliach. Your father-in-law is here with it. Because it would be very strange for him to come up to Moshe's face with his wife and the two kids and say, "Hi, Moshe, I'm Yisro, and I've come here with you to tell him something that's evident before his eyes." This is with a messenger. And Moshe goes out to greet him, totally disregarding the three people in his life that he should be very anxious to see. Right? So I can't tell you whether or not he actually did bring some trinkets from Egypt for his two kids, or whether he brought them some baseball cards or some chewing gum or something. But it's not the way of the Torah at this point to present Moshe that way. What he actually did, I'm not even interested because the Torah doesn't tell me, but the Torah does seem to be presenting it, purposely avoiding the sort of the human, the you know, the you know, the simple side of Moshe that we might want to see actually. He embraced his wife. And they stood and they talked and they, like when Yaakov meets Esav, it says they hugged each other, they talked things over. Or when Yosef meets his brothers after a long, you haven't seen him for a year. Come on. Right? So Moshe is, the Chazal say that this is only a dispensation for Moshe. Right? There are many different ways that Chazal say this, because they were well aware that there were other systems, maybe even Christianity in its early days, although my reading is that they didn't come to this till much later, is that it is better for a man to avoid the marital obligations and marital unions and raising children. Leave yourself just to be married to God, so to say. And the rabbis were trying to say, no, our Kohen Gadol can't even function on Yom Kippur if he's not married. And our greatest one did get married. He had a dispensation afterwards after having his two children. That's why Beis Shammai says we fulfill Peri River with two boys, because Moshe didn't have a girl. Right? But there is a price to pay. Moshe's two sons don't amount to anything. Right? His grandson, according to Chazal, became an idolater. Right, he's mentioned at the end of Sefer Shoftim. Right. Comes at a price. Right. Okay, so that you see, but I want to make sure you can read that. You can read that into what he's doing here in Perikot Ches, which is in Pasuk between Bet through Vav, which is such a long and protracted introduction about the people coming out to greet Moshe. Five psukim, I could have said that in one or two. And then in Zion, it's like, Vayetze Moshe likras chosno, Vayishtachav v'yishaklo, Vayishalu yishlorehu l'shalom, Vayavoa olala, Vayisaper Moshe l'chosno. Wait, what about your wife? Ask how did the bris go? How did he heal? Was he okay? I was worried about him this whole time. Right? I don't mean to impose upon Moshe or anyone else for that matter my personal modes of how I would relate to my wife. That's not fair. You can say, well why not? You sermonize on Shabbos that we should learn from the way Yaakov behaves in certain areas, right? And you say we should learn from that. So why shouldn't I impose my modes upon them? I shouldn't even feel that I have the right to impose my modes of communication to someone else in a different culture in this planet. today. How dare I say, you know, I find something wrong with Abraham. When Hashem told him he would have a child with Sarah, he didn't run home to tell her. How do you like that? How do I know that?
Because she laughed when she heard the Malach.
She left when she heard it from the Malach. She apparently had not heard it. Right? Istama, she didn't even know it was a Malach. As the Korshor says, don't you imagine that every time someone came over to Avram's house for food, when they left, they said, oh, Avram, by this time next year, your wife Sarah will have a baby. You know, and she's listening to that Nechtig talk like everyone else. She didn't know they were angels. When she heard they were angels, she got scared. She goes, oh, no, I didn't really, oh my goodness. And, you know, this is for real. This one's for real, you know. I don't want to lose it because I left. So I don't want to impose my modes of communication. I think that when Rivka heard that she was having twins, she ran home to tell Yitzchak. She told him the younger one will prevail. And still Yitzchak wanted to give Esav Tal HaShemayim and Shemane HaAretz. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking at the way biblical characters interact with their spouses, right? And I'm wondering why Moshe is not talking to Tzipora and his kids and picking them up and saying, so come on, let me show me your baseball card collection, you know, and let's talk things out a little bit, let's throw a ball around a little, right? Did Moshe do those things? Maybe. But the Tanakh, the Chumash totally steps around it. Doesn't even give us a tiniest of glimpses of what Moshe's reunion was like with his wife, like I get with some siblings in the Tanakh, right? Yaakov and Esav, right, Binyamin and Yosef and his brothers, Moshe and Aaron. At least there, the Torah tells me they embrace, they kiss, they hug, they talk things out. Why not with Tzipora? So Chazal say, Achar Shiluchecha. And according to the Drash, that's what Miriam was talking about, not an Ethiopian. It was his relationship with Tzipora. Right? I saw how you came home after he... Moshe, that's no way to behave with your wife. Right? And it came up to a head when she... Why in Parshas Baloscha? So the rabbis are always very clever. Remember what happened just before. Eldad and Medad were locked out of being inspired with the other 70. Right? So Eldad and Medad were... their wives... were talking about what had just happened to their husbands, that their husbands were excluded from prophecy, and Tzipora responded and said, "Don't be so upset that your husband didn't become a prophet. Look what my husband does; he pays no attention to me." So Miriam heard this, and that's where Miriam responded. You get it? Eldad Medad, Tzipora, Miriam, Vatadaber Miriam va'Aaron the motion. All right, so now today's lesson was on, you know, what kind of husband was Moshe? All right,
so, you know, it seems like Rashi and Ibn Ezra are saying that it was like a kavod, you know, like a praise of Moshe. I guess that's
how, right? About the way he's
how he goes straight to Yisrael. I think Ibn Ezra says that he says, "Bavor should go to Yisrael, Bavol so the lowly Yishtov will go down."
Yeah. So the question here is not so much what did he actually do, but why does the Torah record it this way?
Right.
No, and I'm willing to go along with that he definitely did run after his kids and his wife. It's just that the Torah wants to present a particular Moshe that is excuse the pun, but divorced from that kind of thing. And it's, you know. Does the Torah present people exactly as they are? No, I mean, the rabbis didn't always say that. The rabbis say Reuven, it says Vayishkav es Bilhah, and the rabbis say he did something else. So the Torah has a projection of personalities for a particular reason, and that's going to fit an overall picture. And that picture of Moshe, I'm sorry to tell you, does not allow for a woman in his life from now on. From now on means Shmos Perek Dalet. Right? Does not allow for that. It's sad. Remember how Chazal say it? It's Gemara in Shabbos in the ninth parak. It says, after Mamar Har Sinai, Hashem told Moshe, tell the people, Shvu lochem la'oholeichem. You get the drash. Go back to your tents, meaning go back to your bedrooms. You had 3 days, no marital relations. Now go back to your bedrooms. Go back to your wives. But not you, Moshe. The next pasuk, Moshe, you stay here with me.
Question?
Yeah. Yes.
Is it possible that the reason that Moshe marries Sephora, who's the daughter of Yisra, is because he's like part of a certain royal family in Egypt?
Okay, fair enough. So he marries the head of the clan of Midian, yeah. Maybe also that because he acted nobly with them, in a noble fashion with them, remember? When he saved them.
It's also weird that, like, Zipporah isn't, like, a huge character in Zipporah. Like, why is she only mentioned, like, once or twice?
Well, remember, didn't we talk about Robert Alter and the three wells and the character building there? So, that's her role. That's what she did. Yeah. Okay, all right, guys. Have a great Shabbos.
Shabbos.
Oh.
I was thinking the table. I said, "What happened? Oh, you must have taken it."